Okay, so I want to share with you tonight a question that I guess I've had, and I'm sure we've all had, that I found an answer to from a strange place, a drasha that Rabbi Lam gave on Hanukkah in 1971 on a different topic. But I think it actually answers the question quite well. So if you take a look at the first source, it's the beginning of the brothers coming down to Egypt. It's the very first interaction that the brothers have with Yosef. So the brothers came to they came to buy food among all the people that were buying because there was a Rav in Eretz Canaan. Yosef was shalit ala aretz hu mashpir l'chol am ha'aretz ve'yavo achei Yosef ishtach v'lapayim aretzah. And Yosef was the master of the land. He was the one that sold the food, to everyone. And the brothers of Yosef came before him, bowed to him. So again, it's a good question. Was Yosef really selling to everyone? Was Yosef only selling to certain people? Was he like, it's hard to imagine that every single person that bought food in Egypt had to come before Yosef, but there is certainly what to hang your hat on to say that. Yosef saw his brothers, he recognized them, and he treats them as strangers and he speaks to them harshly. And he says to them, "Where are you from?" So they say, "We're from Israel and we came to buy food." Yosef recognizes the brothers and they did not recognize him. Yosef remembered the dreams that he had had, and he says to them, "You're spies and you've come to look at the secrets of the land." They say, "No, it's not true. We just came to buy food." It's not true. We're the sons of one man. We're innocent. We're not spies. It says, "No, it's not true. You're spies." We're 12 brothers of the same man in Canaan, and the younger one is with our father today, and one of us is no longer with us. That's why I say that you're spies. It says the only way that you'll be able to prove your innocence, I swear by Paro's life, is if your younger brother comes down here, which, by the way, does nothing to solve the problem, right? If the 10 of them are spies, why does bringing Binyamin down do anything to change that? Or how does that prove that they're not spies? Shilchu mikem echad v'ikachet achichem etem yasu v'bechanu devreichem ha'emeti itchem v'imlo chei paro kiraglu etem. You'll send one brother back, I'm going to keep the rest of you in jail, and then we'll know for sure if you're spies. And he puts them in jail for 3 days. So Yosef then says on the third day, "This is what you'll do, and you'll live. I fear God." And what does he do? He actually says, rather than putting all of you in jail, except for one, I'm going to do the other way around. I'm going to keep one of you in jail, and the other nine will go free. You'll go back to the land of Israel, and you'll bring your brother back. So there's so many questions that we could ask in these psukim. First of all, why does Yosef have to do all this to them? And why do we say it's because he had his dreams? Is he really trying to make his dreams happen? Right. That's also, like, it seems so cruel. And why does he put his father through all this? All of those are really good questions that we've addressed over the years. We've answered some better, some not quite as well. But I want to just focus on two points here. First of all, why does Yosef draw this whole thing out so long? Right? Why does he need to do that? It probably takes, you know, a few months at least to get through all of this. Why does he do that? Why does he have to put them through all of that? And I think specifically to these psukim, why the 3 days? Why put them in jail for 3 days? Why does he have to do that to them? Why can't he just say, okay, listen, you know, we got to make this work. You know, I'm going to put you in jail for a little bit, maybe a day, a couple hours. You know, you get enough time for one phone call. You get the people scared, and then he bring them back, and then he could bring them back out and say, okay, I've thought about it, and I've decided that I'm only going to send keep one of you, not 10 of you, or not 9 of you. Why does he need 3 days in jail? It's so strange. So that's really the only question I want to try to figure out today. Why do we need like all this time? And certainly, why do we need 3 days in jail? So any other questions that anybody wants to put out there? Any answers anybody wants to suggest before we go on?
Well, I think somebody said it twice that he recognizes brothers. So is he recognizing them physically and maybe recognizing them as emotionally or personality?
Okay.
That hasn't changed, and that this is all part of trying to be that personality.
So is he trying to, he's trying to change them, you're saying?
No, he's trying to find out the true them.
He's trying, okay. And what if he found that the true them is not so great?
We don't know, fortunately, that he does.
Right, but I'm saying, but what if? I know, like it's a...
Yeah.
Would the charade have continued? Would he have, like, never revealed himself?
I'm not sure.
Got it.
Oh. I imagine he would reveal himself because he knows that this was, he realized this is God's plan. But I think, like I said, maybe he is trying to change them a little. If they haven't changed themselves.
Right. Okay. So I think what Greg is suggesting is the idea that he was trying to help them do tshuva, right? But again, that one's a hard one because then he's like playing God, and that's like a pretty rough one, and to do that to his father, it doesn't seem fair. But okay, any other questions? Okay, so let's try to figure out this whole 3 days thing and why this is so drawn out. So perhaps the answer can be found in a very strange place. Maybe we could find it at the beginning. If we go back to the boar where Yosef is sold, maybe we can get the answer from there. So take a look at the second source. It's Perek Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Chaf Chet. One pasuk. Vayavruan Hashem midyanim socharim, vayimshechu vayelu et Yosef min habor, vayimkeru et Yosef al Yimshraelim be'esem kasef, vayaviu et Yosef mitzayma. Obviously, this pasuk is a lightning rod for controversy. Who is doing what? Where are they? But let's go with the classic, not necessarily the most perfect reading, but in the classic answer, Yosef finds himself sold by his brothers to Midyanim, who are socharim. They draw him out. They sell. They take Yosef out of the boar, and they sell Yosef to the Ishmaelim for 20 pieces of silver. And where do those 20 pieces of silver go? Of course, they go to the brothers. And Yosef is then sent to Egypt. Yosef is sold for 20 pieces of silver. So what we're going to take a look at in Medrash tonight that I'm fairly certain that everybody knows and everybody's heard. It's quoted by Art Scroll in the Yom Kippur Machzer underneath the Asara Haruge Malchus, right? So this is, if you take a look, it's Otzer Medrashim Asara Haruge Malchus, Nuscha Bet Dalet. Okay, this Medrash, as Art Scroll points out, is not it's not true. So if anybody says that all Medrash is true, this one is case in point. It's not true because it can't be true, because the people in the story don't live at the same time as each other, so it would have been impossible for this to happen. But it's a really good drasha, and if you were to hear it, having never read the bottom of the Art Scroll before in your life, right before Yizkor, right before Musaf on Yom Kippur, it would be very powerful. So what does the Medrash say? Medrash says, Ilmale shalamdu lekesar Torah lo hayu baim lidekach. If not for the fact that Caesar learned Torah, this would never have happened, right? And the Medrash is basically saying, like, don't teach Torah to non-Jews. It only causes trouble. You could picture that the Caesar is sitting there learning Torah. And he found the pasuk that says that if you sell a person, if you kidnap a person and steal them, so what happens? The punishment is death. He then takes the house, fills it up completely with shoes, and he attaches shoes to the wall. So he calls Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, the Nasi, and his friends, and he asks them, he says, what happens if you kidnap a Jew and sell them? What's the halacha? So Melo Chayv Mita says that the punishment is death. So Amar Lam, Im Kain, Atem Chayavim Mita, Kablu Al Atzmechem Din Shemayim. So he says, if that's the case, you guys are chayv misa, but why? And you should accept upon yourself the judgment from heaven. Amru lo lama, what do we do? So Amru lama b'shvil achi Yosef shemachru et Yosef, because of the brothers of Yosef that sold Yosef. Dechtiv v'yimachru et Yosef, v'chtiv amachram v'kesef tzadik v'avyom havor na'alayim. So if you actually paid attention to the Haftorah last week from Amos, it starts off by saying that because they sold their brother, for shoes. So that and Chazal tell us that's talking about the Mechir Yosef. So he said to them, right, because you sold Yosef, and it's because of the shoes that we're talking about. That's why he filled the whole house up with shoes. They understand that it's for the profit of the shoes that the punishment was. Now this is the part of the Medrash that Art School does not quote. So they say, and worse than that, someone as beautiful as Yosef, would he really sell for 20 pieces of silver? Right, they threw him into the pit naked. Vayevshitu et Yosef, as it says that they took off his ketona pasim and et kutanto. And the boar was empty, there was no water in it. But it had snakes and scorpions. I mean, we're talking about all the famous midrashim in one place. And Yosef was completely distraught by this and said, I'm not going to live. And a person, when they're really terrified, can truly be, their appearance can totally change. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved him from the animals and nothing happened to him. Right? It's very easy to be Yosef-like, to be as beautiful as Yosef when all of the circumstances are exactly perfect. But when they're not, what ends up happening is their appearance can change very quickly. I'll tell you a quick story. So this past Wednesday, I don't know if anybody how closely people follow the Israeli news, but there was a piece in the Israeli news on Tuesday night about how the Miss Universe pageant, like celebrity people, are touring Jerusalem. So I don't know if anybody followed that. I haven't have seen it, and I only read it because there was like some controversial piece to it. So I started reading the article. So Wednesday morning, we were in Yerushalayim. We took the kids to the Shuk for breakfast. They're like, you know, tasting here, tasting there. We spent 2 hours eating breakfast. So we're walking through the Shuk, and all of a sudden you see like a camera crew walking through there. It's a little strange. So what ends up happening is like 15 of the Miss Universe contestants were walking through the Shuk. So it's like a very strange thing. Like the Shuk is not meant for that. But okay, so they went through. And then like 15, 20 minutes later, Miss Aruba, she had like her own private tour where she went behind the counter of one of the places and she made her own waffles and ice cream and whatever. So after she comes out of there, I see that she's being interviewed by people. And it's like very soft questions that they're throwing at her, nothing that's very difficult to deal with. And I'm thinking to myself, she's in a very good position because she's surrounded by a very secure entourage and she's getting very easy questions. But if all of a sudden the circumstances were to change and she was in a crisis mode, I don't know if she would have her picture-perfect smile through a mask and everything else. And I think that's really what you see with Yosef. Yosef was the Mr. Universe, you know, contestant winner. He looked perfect in everything, but you throw him into the pit, you take away his clothing and you surround him by scorpions, yeah, he doesn't feel so great. So even though God protects him and nothing happened to him, nonetheless, he is he's a lot worse for the wear. So what happens? And they sell him naked from within the pit. So God says, it's not right. You can't do that. Yosef can't be standing naked in front of all of creations. So Amru Kameya Taluy Butsavaro. He wore this kameya, this amulet around his neck. And out of the kameya, God had Gavriel take a piece of clothing, right? God does not try to make miracles that are too big. So rather than making the clothing come from nowhere, it comes from inside the amulet. So the they turned to the Yishmaelim and said, wait, we sold you a naked brother for 20 shekel. We didn't sell you a clothed one. Give us the piece of clothing back. Na'alayim, minalim, they add four more pairs of shoes. Uvoto beged havyum mitzayim, uvo mecharu, uvo asru, uvo havyu, lefne paro, uvo malachal mitzayim. And it's in this clothing that he's brought to Egypt, he's sold in Egypt, he's imprisoned in Egypt, and it's the clothing that he wears in front of Paro. Vootau kesar rasha yodesh mechru minalayim. Caesar knew this. He knew the story that they were sold for shoes. Ba'amar lehem kibuleichem din shamayim. And he says to them, I want you to accept your heavenly punishment. So they say, but if the brothers of Yosef did this, like, why do we deserve to die? So if the brothers of Yosef were alive today, I would take them out and judge them. Achshav she'enu mechayim esebachem din shatem shkulim kacha Yosef b'mechirato. So he says, now that you're alive, now that they're not alive, I'm going to do din with those that are comparable to the Acha Yosef on this debt of Mechirat Yosef that's been hanging around for all of these years. And that is our story. So it's a very strange story. And obviously the story itself is made up, but it could be a true story. It would certainly represent Roman justice, which is not just. The whole argument that you could put these people at fault for something that the brothers had done, especially when there was reconciliation there, seems very hard. Okay, so that's our story. So the question that Rabbi Lam has is, why shoes? The brothers could have sold Yosef for anything, right? Why does it have to be that they sold him for shoes, right?
Well, they're saying that the Yishmaelim asked, but it wasn't the brothers' idea.
Oh, okay, fine. So why, especially if the Medrash is made up? You see, if the Medrash is real, or if it's not totally real, but like there's parts of it that should be real, then we could struggle with you know. Then we have to wonder, like, okay, this story really happened, you know, like. What's her name? What is it? Ashes, the wife of Lot. She turns into a pillar of salt. Right? That's pshat. Right? That's what the psukim tell us. So that's a hard one. Right? Like, why does it have to be there? So that's when we can sit there and make stories that are justifications. Right? She went looking for salt, which ended up revealing to all the people of Stone that she was hosting guests. Fine, I get all that. But here, this one's like a lot tougher. If the story is completely made up, why would the shoes be the item that was sold? Why couldn't it, or that was bought? Why couldn't it be clothing? Why couldn't it be, I don't know, food? Why couldn't it just be cash? Which is what the psukim tell us, right? So the psukim tell us that, I guess, what you would say, and maybe the way the Medrash would read is that it was enough money for four more pairs of shoes. But yeah, like, why does it have to be shoes? So that is the question. Any thoughts, any suggestions?
I think the think shoes is kind of a, right back then was a status type of shoes you owned, kind of showed how much money you had. And maybe that's why it's used as the, as how much it was worth because of the shoes.
Okay.
You go from a poor slave to a independent rich person, the sandalim you're wearing.
I hear, and I guess on top of that, if the brothers already were wearing shoes and now they had a second pair of shoes, now they're like truly wealthy people. Okay, Steve, it sounded like you were trying to say something.
No, I was going to say, as far as status, you know, shoes haven't changed that much since then. But still, I was thinking that it's not so obvious, meaning that if you're walking around with your cloak is brown and suddenly you're walking around with a purple one, everyone's going to take notice. On the other hand, if you get a new pair of shoes, I don't know about then, but most people don't walk around, you know, the streets of Manhattan or any other city looking down at other people's shoes. It's pretty unobtrusive. So even though they may not have wanted to spend the money on something that would be, I'm guessing they didn't want to spend the money on something that would shout and scream, hey, look, suddenly we're really rich. And shoes are just pretty unobtrusive.
Okay, I mean, I don't know if that's like, if that was societally the case back then, but certainly nowadays, right? You know, you get much more attention when you wear a new flashy coat than a new pair of shoes, okay? Definitely could be. Any other thoughts? Okay, so Rabbi Lam gave a drasha, Chanukah of 1971, where he asks a similar question. He says, why shoes? Why is that what the Medrash, you know, suggests? And he quotes an answer from his grandfather. His grandfather says the following. He says that in the olden days, most people were poor. And because they were poor, they did not wear shoes. And if you had a pair of shoes, you only wore them when you were going a long distance. But if you were walking locally, if you were walking a short distance from, I don't know, your house down the block, you would not waste your time putting on shoes. And the reason why you wouldn't waste your time putting on shoes is you were going to damage the shoes, and you didn't want to do that. I remember that when Rabbi and Rebbetzin Hochberg celebrated their last Shabbos in Jamaica States, so I think the last speech I heard was from Rebbetzin Hochberg. And in her speech, she quoted someone who was writing about shoes, and they had a very special type of shoe, and they therefore would resole it over and over and over again. And they were saying that every step you take, you lose a micro piece of the sole. And so the nimshal was that every step you take, you know, in life is the same thing. You have an opportunity to make a micro difference in the world that you live in with the people that you meet and stuff like that. So there is damage done to shoes, albeit tiny, and a significant, there is impact, I guess would be a better way of saying it, that every step you take wearing shoes makes. So if shoes are something that were a bit of a luxury for most people, and a person only wore shoes if they were going a long distance, but going locally, not walking very far, you did not wear shoes. The message of shoes are that you only wear them when you're in a rush. But if you are going a short distance, you would be willing to expose yourself and carefully tread upon the ground. But when you don't want to expose yourself and you don't have the time to be sensitive, and you don't have the time to be careful, that's when you put on shoes. Rabbi Lam's grandfather said that the reason you put on shoes, the reason why the brothers put on shoes, is because the whole message of this story was that yes, Yosef might have been a pain, and Yosef might have deserved to be punished. All of those are true, but the mistake that the brothers made is that they acted too quickly. They wore shoes, and because they wore shoes, they chose not to expose themselves, and they chose not to be careful, and they chose not to be deliberate, and not to be sensitive. And that's the problem. The problem is that the brothers should have been more deliberate. They should have been more careful. They should have taken more time. And had they done that, perhaps they would have come to a different conclusion. So where else in the Torah do we have shoes? Right? Can anybody think of a couple examples of where we have shoes?
Moshe and the snap.
Moshe and the snap, good. Where else?
Yoshua.
Yoshua and his, right, like version of the snap, right?
Yeah.
Okay, where else?
Chalitza,
okay, good. Anybody else?
I don't know if someone said it, but the Avodah, or lack thereof, the Avodah on the base of Mikdash.
Okay, good. The Avodah on the base of Mikdash was done barefoot. Good. Where else? So it's probably a little bit less obvious, but we have that by
Avram. I mean, he's talking about laces.
Oh, it's true. Right? He says michuta tzrocha nal. Okay, good. Yeah, I'm not sure. You could probably answer it there also. Okay, so the last one is, if you take a look at the second to last source, hello totiru mimano ad boker, by the Korban Pesach. You cannot leave, and this is Korban Pesach of Mitzrayim, you can't leave any of it over to the morning. Whatever is left over, you burn. And this is how you should eat it. Matneichem chagurim, your belts on, aleichem baragleichem, your shoes on your feet, your stick in your hand. You eat it in a rushed way. Pesach hu Lashem. And this is the Pesach, Korban Pesach says, the Pasuk, that how is it that you eat Korban Pesach? You eat it, the one in Mitzrayim, with your shoes on your feet. Why? Because you're eating it bechipazon. You're eating it in haste. You're eating it quickly. That is how the Korban Pesach is consumed. When you want to do something in a quick way, you wear your shoes. But take a look at the source right before that. Moshe goes to see what is going on. Why is it that the bush is burning and yet it's not being consumed? God sees that Moshe has turned to look at it, and God calls out Moshe from the snare, and he says, Moshe, Moshe, and Moshe answers, Hineini. He says, don't come any closer. Take off your shoes. The place that you're about to come on is holy ground. Moshe spends a lot of time there. Days there. What is God telling him? Take your shoes off of your feet. Why? Because when you need to do something meticulously, when you need to do something carefully, what is it that you're supposed to do? You need to be in the mind frame, in the frame of mind of Shal Nalecha Mi'al Raglecha. Your shoes are off your feet. You're being careful. You're being deliberate. The Kohanim and the Beis HaMikdash were doing the Avoda with great care. They take off their shoes. Chalitza, right? Maybe the message of Chalitza, when we take off the person's shoes, is what do we say to him? We're saying that maybe you weren't so deliberate in your thinking by leaving this woman over, by not bringing her into your home. That's a message that's a message of shoes, according to Rabbi Lamb's grandfather. Now I think we can come back to our original question. Why the 3 days? And why is it that Yosef is so deliberate? Why does Yosef draw this whole story out? Perhaps what Yosef is doing to the brothers is Yosef is reminding them that the reason why they got themselves into trouble in the first place is that they did not think carefully. So the whole story is meant to be an opportunity for them to be reflective. And certainly the 3 days in jail are meant for them to think about what happened. And what happens when they're in jail? They do clearly think about what happened back at the original boar, because Reuven says to them, this is all your fault. If you had listened to me, if you had acted differently, this would never have happened in the first place. That's what Yosef is trying to do. Yosef is trying to tell them, we need to take time. We need to really think and be more deliberate. And maybe if we do that, we'll be able to make better decisions going forward. And it seems to be that if you follow the story of Yosef and the brothers carefully, when you get to the very end, when it's, I guess, the end of Mikkei, it's the beginning of Vayigash, and Yosef once again finds himself with a brother in the boar, so to speak, and there's a brother who's potentially going to be cast away from the family, the brothers have come a very long way, and their whole thinking is very different. Perhaps, though, there are rare, the message of Korban Pesach, which is put on shoes, is that there are rare occasions when you actually need to act quickly. And if you take a look at the Sfarno last source, Manechem Chagurim, Mizumanim L'derech Ke'inyan V'yishenes Matnav L'orot Al Bitachon. Why did they have to be dressed? Why are their shoes on? To show us that they had Bitachon, Biltim Supak Be'el Yitbarach. There were no questions of God. There were no doubts that God would bring their salvation that night. Biotam Achinim Atzman L'derech Bo'otam Be'vei Kela. They were still in jail, and yet they were letting themselves go. They were showing that they were prepared to leave. Perhaps on rare occasions, something is so clear that we need to act swiftly. And we can't take things slowly. And those are the times we put on shoes. But in general, the idea is that haste makes waste. And so Chazal are teaching us that shoes represent when a person is not careful, when a person is acting quickly. And what the Yosef story is telling us is that in the overwhelmingly majority, in most cases, and in most things that we're going to see, the best advice is to act carefully and to act slowly. And in doing so, one is less likely to mess up and more likely to make the right decisions.